Books. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our book pick segment. We look forward to this each and every Tuesday. This morning we have one bookseller representing two bookstores with limitless possibilities, which we're very excited about. We welcome Cheryl McKeon from the Bookhouse in Albany and Market Block Books in Troy, New York. Hello, how are you?
Hello, Joe. I'm great. Very happy to be here.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
How are things generally going?
We are enjoying spring. We had an enthusiastic kickoff to spring with Independent Bookstore Day last Saturday.
So it's going well. That's beautiful. That was a great event, and I'm glad you did so well. Fantastic. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I'm going to go down the stack, and the first one on the stack is The Antidote by Karen Russell.
Love this book.
And I'm sure I'm not the first person to sit in this chair and talk about The Antidote.
I think you are, actually.
Do you?
Go to it.
Well, I picked this up actually as a Libro FM, and I had the hardcover next to me, and I thought, I want to listen to this one. And I was, and this is a pun, I didn't mean it, not prepared to be blown away by a story about the Dust Bowl. It is... new to me, Karen Russell's writing. I don't know how I've avoided reading her, but I had. And her fantastical style blended with literary realism were a pleasant surprise. The Antidote is set in a fictional prairie town of Uz, Nebraska, between two events. Black Sunday, April 1935, when a blizzard of dirt blanketed the plains, and the Republican River flood just weeks later. It's a creation story of the United States. It's a reminder of the price paid by Native people, the agricultural malpractice that destroyed the land, the rampant racism, biases, and sexism of the time, but it's also magical, funny, and hopeful. Central to the story is the Prairie Witch, or the Antidote, who hears secrets townspeople pay her to keep in her memory vault because they can't bear to hold them in their own. So she has an ear horn, she makes appointments, and she listens to people's secrets. Of course, the town has complicated feelings about the witch, who is really a sympathetic woman with secrets of her own. Russell's characters narrate chapters alternately, which was really fun. At first, it seemed like, okay, this could get complicated. The novel's swelling with story times and history, storylines and history, but the relationships of the characters gel quickly. There's the Antidote, the Polish farmer, his niece, who is the star of the determined girls' basketball team against all odds hoping to win the county championship, the nefarious sheriff, the sentient scarecrow, the black photographer sent by the federal government to document farm life, and her magical Graflex graphic camera that, when the film is developed, reveals the region's past and the future. The book does include photographs from that era, from the federal project, with a fascinating side story of the fate of the photos of that era. It's an epic, a murder mystery, a clear climate change warning. The Antidote asks, what does a nation choose to forget? The book is beautifully produced with photos and titillating chapter titles, but the Libro FM audio read by eight narrators really brings the characters to life.
It is. I did the same thing, exactly what you did. I listened to it and as I was reading it, and it's just lovely. It was so great. And all of those characters are so well developed, and even the scarecrow.
Yes.
And which comes to great prominence. But my goodness, what a beautiful novel.
Yes, I totally agree. As I was reading one chapter, Nell, the basketball player, I would get completely engaged with her and then quickly turn to be engaged with the Antidote again. Well, she does that so well.
Right. And then every once in a while, I'm not a big fantasy sci-fi person, but so then when you talk about taking in their memories and the things, and I'm like, I don't know. But man, it had me every step of the way. I'm like, okay, I buy all of this.
Oh,
this
great.
Is great.
Great.
Fantastic. Karen Russell, The Antidote. now out. I did do an interview with Karen. It's online. Mm-hmm. It's a book show, WAMC.org, and she's lovely, and I think you'll enjoy listening to it as well.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. And my next book is Aftertaste by Dario Lavelle. Now, I didn't plan to read a book about forgetting and a book about remembering next to each other, but this is how it turned out. Aftertaste presents a protagonist whose mission is to help people remember, unlike the antidote who helps people forget. In a novel blending love, loss, and culinary delights, Kostya Dubovny channels his ability to discern favorite foods of the deceased into a mission to comfort those left behind, including himself. Aftertaste is Dario Lavelle's debut, and it's flavored with more than a touch of magical realism. Once again, we have magical realism, which I just bought into immediately. Kostya's story moves between the fast-paced Manhattan restaurant scene and the afterlife. His clairgustance, which is a word that I think might be real, but it's the clairvoyance of taste, inspires him to found restaurants where the house special is a dish individually created to entice a customer's loved one back for a last shared meal. Aftertastes appeared in Kostya's mouth like messages, dishes rooted in the dead that he could shepherd back to life, from poppy seed pierogi to pork dumplings to his father's favorite Ukrainian dish, pechanka. Flavors come unbidden to him, and his culinary skills translated them to dishes. There's a love story. Mara is a feisty psychic who understands Kostya's passion but warns him about going too far with ghosts who may want to rest in peace. He doesn't register the catastrophe looming in the afterlife. And in fact, passages are narrated by those who are trapped, who long to move on. The sense of dis-ease that this entrapment of the ghosts presents suggests that the book isn't going to end well, but nonetheless, it does. It's spiced with humor and descriptions of ingredients and recipes, and it's delightfully hopeful.
It is Aftertaste by Dario Lavelle. Sounds great. All right.
And I move on to nonfiction, Change of Habit. It's kind of a long title, but it does sum it up well. Leaving behind my husband, career, and everything I owned to become a nun by Sister Monica Clare.
All right. There's
now,
a journey.
Back in the 1960s, in the Deep South, 5-year-old Claudette Powell was watching TV when she sees the nun story. She turns to her mom and says, "That's what I want to be." Her mom, a horrified Southern Baptist, does everything she can to dissuade her daughter. But in A Change of Habit, Sister Monica Clare describes her circuitous, determined path to the convent. From that Southern Baptist home through years of detours that never derail her dream. "I spent the first 46 years of my life," she writes, "convinced I was on the wrong path. Everywhere I went, I felt like a fish climbing a tree." She ticked all the boxes, meeting expectations. She went to NYU. She joined an improv group. She joined an acoustic rock duo. She moved to Hollywood and had an advertising career. She got married. So in this path, she describes her life as a Southern Baptist child, Mormonism as a teenager, and then in 2000 to the Episcopalian faith. In 2009, she began the long road to being life professed as a nun, which she achieved in 2012. And one of the most fascinating parts of the book is you just don't walk up to the convent and knock on the door and say, "You're looking for converts, aren't you, to nunhood?" No, it's a path. And there were a great many steps that she had to take. She is now the Sister Superior at the community of St. John the Baptist in New Jersey. The book is straightforward, very, very honest. It's often very funny. She describes her journey, and she says that now, as such a superior, she sometimes calls the congregation the audience.
Oh, that's great. Again, the name of the book is Change of Habit by Sister Monica Clare, out today. Okay, next.
I have a novel that has been out for a few months. It's Evening Shades by Lee Martin. And I think Lee Martin should be better known. He's a very good writer. He's also a professor at The Ohio State University, and his books are set in the Midwest. One critic calls this book, Evening Shades, part Mystic River, part Winesburg, Ohio, and that's really what Lee Martin's books feel like. This Evening Shades is a tightly written story of Henry Dees, a middle-aged math teacher with secrets and sins, who escapes the town that haunts him and moves to a town a couple of states over. He goes from Indiana to Illinois. He arrives in town in his 1965 powder blue Mercury Comet, mm-hmm. and is immediately a source of curiosity and suspicion. Edith Green is a spinster in town. She is sick to death of being alone, and she and Dees strike up a romance. What exactly Henry is fleeing is mysterious, but the voice of his Indiana hometown clues us in. What we do see is the tender love that's growing between Henry and Edith in spite of the town busybodies who cast doubts on their romance and wonder about what Henry is actually up to. It's interesting that really the four protagonists, the four voices here, are Henry and Edith and the two towns. The many dramas playing out in even the most peaceful Midwestern towns are at the heart of Lee Martin's novels, and Evening Shades is definitely gripping to the very end.
Evening Shades by Lee Martin. Okay.
And another nonfiction now, released I think just last week, is The Next Day, Transitions, Change, and Moving Forward by Melinda French Gates. And probably everybody has some idea of who Melinda French Gates is. She writes a very honest, a very straightforward, a very accessible, beautifully produced little book, The Next Day. It's a lovely, short, hardcover format with a white cover. It's very pretty. And Melinda French Gates offers advice on growing through life's transitions. She openly shares her story of her successful career. She was she did well as a child in high school, college, Stanford. She, of course, married a Microsoft co-founder, Bill Gates, and together they founded the unprecedented, generous Gates Foundation. After the divorce, Melinda eventually left the foundation, which was also big news at the time, and she founded her own philanthropy, Pivotal. Pivotal focuses on women's empowerment here and abroad. She is committed to preserving the rights she has had for her little granddaughters, and she speaks openly of being very frightened about what that future holds for her granddaughters, and she's working very hard to assure that it will be a good future. It's a conversational style. It's uplifting, and it speaks to anyone who's navigating any change. It will be a great graduation gift.
Wonderful. That sounds riveting. Melinda French Gates, The Next Day, Transitions, Change, and Moving Forward. Is she a little bit bitter?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Well, that's good.
No. That's
good for her.
Yeah. Her reference to the marriage is just occasional.
Yes.
And it's perfunctory.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Right. And I read all, of course, I love to read the notes in the back, you know, who she thanks. You know, and there's a little bit of a clue in there that there's some more happiness, you know, in her future.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Very nice.
That's right, kind of like a voyeur when you read the notes in the back.
Good for her. The Next Day, Transitions, Change, and Moving Forward by Melinda French Gates. All right, next up.
Another nonfiction. This one has a beautiful cover, and I pulled it out so I can hold it up and show you in case you haven't seen it.
Oh, that is beautiful.
It's a beautiful cover of basically a backyard and a neighborhood anywhere in America. The title of the book is Close to Home, The Wonders of Nature Just Outside Your Door by Tor Hansen. Tor Hansen is a conservation biologist. He lives on an island with his family in Washington State. But his descriptions of the natural world and his advice on caring for what we can find right at home are not strictly regional. The book is appropriate anywhere. It's not a Pacific Northwest book, per se. Close to Home is his sixth book, but he maintains a boyish enthusiasm. He reminds me of Bill Nye the Science Guy, for all of you who remember the early Bill Nye the Science Guy. The book is brimming with science and nature facts, delivered in a neighborly style. Turn off outside lights unless you really need them. Plant milkweed. Maybe not new tips, but delivered with engaging details and facts. He describes going out into his yard to his office, which is a former raccoon shack in the backyard, and stopping and watching a bird build a nest. And what he gleans from just that simple activity, he then shares in the book, and it inspires us all to stop and look.
That is beautiful.
He reminds me of Margaret Renkel and Cy Montgomery. Thor Hansen celebrates the joy of nature that waits right next to us. Another thing about Close to Home is that it is certainly written for grown-ups, and we shelve it in grown-up nature, but it would be easily accessible for any young nature lover, I would say 13 and up. The language, the style is very accessible and so inspirational.
Have you read Chloe Dalton's Raising Hair?
I have dipped in and out of it.
Okay.
Yes. How about you?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Just stunning. But again, the nature is the aspect of it is it's a great story, just a beautiful, beautiful book. But sounds close.
We have it always have it face out on the front table so that we can stand at the counter and look at it every day. It's such a beautiful cover.
It's a beautiful cover.
And it's comforting.
Yes, and all of those I learned this in speaking with her, but all of those illustrations are taken from real pictures of the actual Leverett, who was Chloe's roommate.
Roommate.
Yes.
And thank you for saying Leverett, because I'm trying to remember that word.
Yes, it's great. There's a whole thing about the bunnies, hares, Leveretts. We learn a lot of there about that. Close to Home is the name of the book. That sounds fantastic, by Thor Hansen.
Okay. My last offer is a picture book. And it is by a local author, Elizabeth Zunon. It's a children's illustrated book. It takes young readers on a trek to deliver an everyday household staple, salt. Kids will not look at the salt shaker the same way after learning the story of young Malik, who joins his father's caravan, traveling by camel across the Sahara to deliver this precious commodity to Timbuktu. And we learn about mining salt, about transporting salt, about the kind of like Mark Kurlansky told us earlier about the value of salt and its use in commerce, but of course its use in food and in the survival of humans. It's an entertaining look at a culture that kids likely never heard of. A little different from a picture book. It's entertaining, but it's also so educational.
That sounds amazing, too. I love Mark Kurlansky's stuff. The title of the book is Through Sand and Salt, A Tale of Discovery Across the Sahara. All right. What else would you like to tell us about?
I have a couple of add-ons.
Yep.
As Mother's Day and summertime approach, we booksellers always think about, what can I carry with me? I don't want a heavy book for the airplane. What can I take to the beach? So there are two here that I would highly recommend for all of those needs. The first one publishes today amid much excitement, and that is Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. She has been featured in the New York Times. Readers pretty much have heard of Remarkably Bright Creatures, but now that it's in paperback, we're very excited that more people will be reading it.
Beautiful spine work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Painted edges, I think
painted
we're calling
edges.
Them.
Okay, they're very good.
Yes.
We'll go with that.
The nautical theme on the edges of this beautifully rendered paperback. So Remarkably Bright Creatures is actually the way that both humans and their friends, in this case the octopus, can become even more remarkably bright. It's the story of a woman who cleans an aquarium in the Pacific Northwest and the friendship that she develops with Marcellus the octopus. It's absolutely, talk about leaping into magical realism and anything we might call science fiction. This really has, everybody who's read it has said they were so engaged in how real this friendship is. Highly recommended.
Shelby Van Pelt, Remarkably Bright Creatures. And one more.
One more is another one that just came out in paperback we're very excited about, and that is the Paris novel by Ruth Reichel. It was in hardcover for a little over a year, and it's now in paperback, the same lovely bright red cover. Perfect answer to what can I get her for Mother's Day? Either one of these, Remarkably Bright Creatures or Ruth Reichel. If you're not traveling this summer or if your recipient isn't, you can go to Paris.
Yeah, there's that option as well. For more information on the Bookhouse or Market Block, you can go to their website, bhny.com, bhny.com. You can also see the list, wamc.org/roundtable. Cheryl, you're the best. Thank you so much. It was great.
It was such fun. Thank you. It goes so fast.
Good stuff. All right. We thank you again. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.